Did you see the stylish kids in the riot? Shoveled up like mugs at the night on fire, wombles bleed, truncheons and shields. You know I cherish you, my love.
Welcome to the Young IPA Podcast. I'm James, this is Pete.
Another year, eh?
Another year. It is January the 15th. It is episode 92. We are back and better than ever and on a brand new day. So as we said at the end of the last year's shows, we're moving to Tuesdays from now on. And there's going to be some other podcasts hopefully coming pretty soon as well from other staff members here at the IPA. So a lot to look forward to. But yeah, the Young IPA Podcast now coming out on Tuesdays. So yeah,
different that'll be vibe.
Fun. Different vibe. Yeah. I feel warmer. Yeah. I feel more ready.
Okay.
I'm just saying these things to make people think that it's going to be a good show.
Well, I'm really serious on a Tuesday, so yep. No more jokes, no more swearing. Oh, I didn't swear, but you know.
Yeah, well, off air, you'd really lord around like an angry man.
So, you know,
a tyrant,
Tuesdays,
if you will.
Yeah, yeah, exactly right. No, tyrant. Tuesdays, let's get serious.
All right, cool. So we'll talk about, the big thing for the IPA this week was the release of the latest edition of the History Audit. Yeah. So this is something where Dr. Bella DeBrera, great friend of the show, coming up later in the show. We're going to be talking to her about this report. So basically, it's Bella surveying all of the Australian history subjects on offer in Australian universities and what they're being taught. And this might... hope you're sitting down for this, Pete. Well, I'm looking right at you and you are sitting down.
I can confirm.
Can confirm you're sitting down.
Yeah.
It's not great.
No, well,
it's not great out there. Yeah. This report, it's available on the website ipa.org.au if you want to read it. Australian History's Last Stand, an audit of the Australian history teaching at universities. So, basically, of the 147 Australian history subjects offered in Australian universities, there are the three most common themes are identity politics, class, race and gender. That's 102 subjects out of 147.
Yep.
Indigenous history and studies, 57 out of 147, and war and conflict, 53 subjects. But the main takeaway there, identity politics making up 102 out of 147, that's, I would say, too many.
Look, I'm no expert, James, as you well know, but I would also say that's too many. I think that people should read the report, but if they don't have time to read the report, the one thing they should know is the individual that's mentioned most in all the history subjects is Pauline Hanson.
Pauline Hanson.
The most influential person in Australian history.
According to universities, most referenced person.
Says Australian history universities.
Yep. There is not a single prime minister mentioned in any subject.
No. Not
but
one.
Pauline Hanson is mentioned three times.
Yep.
Like when people talk about how the right wing in America is making Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez a celebrity and it's like, oh, you're just picking this tiny person that you can make fun of and they're expanding it. It's like, well, the inverse is happening right now in universities. Like apparently Pauline Hanson is the biggest influential person we've ever had.
Well, you know, fish and chip shop owner from Ipswich,
yeah.
James.
It'll be a weird thing for like future people to look back on. It's like, well, she really... man, held sway. Anyway, the only two other people that are mentioned by name are Charles Wentworth and Henry Lawson.
Okay.
Sorry, like, really, we're struggling there. Anything else you wanted to say about this one?
No, that's it. That's it. Let's save it for Bella.
We are saving it for Bella because she's going to be talking through it a lot more. We also made...
she loves history.
She does.
So.
Yeah. We also made a video explaining through the report, one of the IPA explainer series. So that is available on our YouTube page, on our Facebook page, and on our Twitter page. So any way that you connect with the IPA, you can go watch the video. It's only 2 minutes and it's very, very good. Well done, Saul and Bella.
Very good. All right. Oh, you're again, aren't you?
I am again. So, the other big news, apparently there's a government shutdown in the US. This is another thing that people might be aware of. It is the longest government shutdown in US history now. I think today is day 24, no end in sight. Yeah, it's the longest government shutdown in US history. If you haven't been following it, it's basically come down to Trump wants to build the wall between the Mexican and the US border. You look like you want to say something.
No. Like,
keep going. All right. If it comes down to the wall between the US and the Mexican border, Democrats aren't going to fund it. Trump wants the funding. Government is shut down. And it's not going to come back up again until one of Trump or the Democrats blinks.
That's correct.
Yes.
Enters the fourth week.
Yep.
Which is its longest in history. As you mentioned, I was surprised because they shut down all the time, the US government. So I was surprised it was the longest in US history. One thing I liked about the wall, which Trump said during the week, Trump said he agreed with critics that the idea of a border wall was medieval, but that did not mean it was a bad idea. Wheels were also a medieval invention, which is not true, but still used today, he said.
Yeah.
Good point.
Yes.
So think about that, James and Nina, as you...
what was a medieval invention? Before then, chaos. Chaos everywhere.
Yeah, I think the wheels was invented by the ancient Egyptians, but anyway.
So the other part of it is, like, So far be it for me to say what should happen on the US-Mexican border.
Far
be it from me, because I'm not an expert. It's not something I think about from day to day. Yeah. It's one of those ones where I'm not going to spend any time on it, because every 3 months someone is taunted pieces by crocodiles in far north Queensland. Mm. That is my theory on these things. Yeah. But there are things that are coming up here which I'm like, this is so ridiculous. Like, there was the Trump goes down to the border. He gives the, you know, basically... the pitch to the US public, like, this is why we need a wall.
Yeah.
And then cut to the Democratic leaders, Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer, giving their response. Did you see that?
I didn't see
it. It was the weirdest thing in the world. So you need to look at it, like, the photos of it. But Schumer and Pelosi, I mean, it's like, I'm trying to explain a photo to you, but Schumer and Pelosi are behind one podium, two camera, just staring. Everyone was saying, like, they look like the Norman Rockwell painting American Gothic of, like, the farmers standing outside a barn.
This has really got to you, hasn't it?
It really has. But, like, seriously, there is enough people in the room that one person goes, hang on, should they not look like weirdos? Like, well, this is a really important moment for the Democratic Party. Should we try and do a good job of it? I mean, no one was in there doing that.
That sounds pretty reasonable to me, mate.
Yeah. The other one I'm going to show you is Jim Acosta, foe of the Trump administration. This is a guy that got suspended from the White House. Genuine foe.
Not a frenemy.
Not a frenemy at all. But, like, this is a guy that, yeah, got his press coverage pass removed or whatever that was. That was a whole thing. Anyway, he goes down to the border. Not a fan of the wall.
No, not a fan.
He goes down to the border and he tweets a video of him walking around, like, because there's already some wall down there.
Yeah, there's a bit of wall.
Which is part of it already. But, like... he's down there, he's at the wall, and he says, I found some steel slats down on the border, but I don't see anything resembling a national emergency situation, at least not in the McAllen, Texas area of the border where Trump will be today. That is the biggest cell phone in history. I am at a wall, and I don't see any illegal immigrants around. Wonder why that is. It's like, look, a gun in my head, I'm not a huge fan of the wall.
Okay. But there's no gun in the room.
Well, I haven't frisked you, which I usually do before a podcast, because I never quite know when Pete's going to take these things.
Yeah.
But, like, you can't give them that. Like, I'm at a wall, there's no illegal immigrants.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, well, like, that's... walls do work, dude.
Yeah.
Avoid the wall.
That's right, just like the wheel. So. Anyway,
these are my things about it.
Well, can I raise one thing that I noticed? Yep. So, obviously, I think it's 800,000 federal workers haven't been paid, which is pretty hardcore, isn't it?
Yeah.
That would never happen in Australia. If we had a government shutdown, the public sector workers would still get paid.
Yes.
Anyway, some of them aren't, but as pointed out by, I think it was the Mises Institute. That's an institute, isn't it? Yeah. Federal workers still make 17% more than similar workers in the private sector, which means that on average, they can go nearly 9 weeks and they'd still have the same average earnings as private sector workers.
Yeah.
So don't feel too sorry for them.
I kind of feel bad for them. Like, their fault that the Democrats and the Republicans can't get along.
Park rangers and stuff like that.
Yeah, it's like, I got a mate of mine who's, like, working in Africa in, like, the Peace Corps, and, like, he can't do anything over there.
Oh, really?
I think. I remember a Facebook status. I don't know the update on it. Anyway, shout out Nick DeMasi. Good guy.
Nick.
Anyway, the other part of it is everyone's freaking out. Government shutdown. How can this happen? Yep. What's going to happen to America? And Pete and I will never stop pointing out the little nation of Belgium didn't have a government for a very long time.
Ages.
Outperformed any of their, competitors, but other European countries. Oh. Economically.
We're big on shutdowns.
We are big on shutdowns.
Shutdowns are one of our big things.
Yeah.
So
keep it up.
Yep.
Make it go longer. You know what?
Double it.
Just keep it going. Maybe I go into those meetings, because you saw, like, Trump and Pelosi had a meeting and Trump said, I didn't get what I want. And then he literally goes, bye-bye, and walks out of the room.
Is that right?
Yeah. I'll just keep doing that. I'll just yell out bye-bye and someone will just walk out of a room.
Yeah. That sounds like you could be crucial intervention.
Anyway, another big showdown politically, Pete.
Well,
Brexit. Still a thing.
The vote is, the parliamentary vote is Tuesday night, British time, which is sometime on Wednesday morning for us, depending on when it actually happens. Theresa May, the British Prime Minister, has warned opponents of her deal that they risk letting the British people down if they don't vote for it, which is a bit rich coming from her. The Labour leader or Labour Party has said that she faces a humiliating defeat in Tuesday's crunch vote. She's urged critics to have a second look at the deal and has made new assurances on the Irish border that it has legal force. Jeremy Corbyn, the PM, what's his role?
Labour leader.
says the PM has completely and utterly failed. Anyway, what's going to happen is it'll probably not get up.
It will be a massacre.
The Labour Party's voting against it. Democratic Unionist Party has 10 MPs that are going to go vote against it. And
you'd assume there'd be a lot of conservatives voting against it.
They reckon about 100.
That's a lot. That's many.
That's a lot.
That's
so,
a sizable number.
So that looks like it's not going to be successful.
Yeah, here's the thing. This deadline for Britain to leave the EU is the end of March.
Yeah.
They are so far away from anything right now.
Yeah, it's...
It is so bad.
Yeah, it's a mess. It's a bit of a mess.
Yeah, so, like, there's also talk like Corbyn's going to push for a no-confidence vote on Theresa May.
That's right, yeah.
Which I'm sure there's a lot of conservatives out there going, that would be good if he did that. This is just so catastrophic. I can't, like, I mean, every time we bring up Brexit, Pete and I just look at each other and we just go, this is bad. But like, it's so bad. The idea is eventually they'll just all come to the table and figure out like the easiest form of Brexit to just get something done.
Yep.
And that is going to be, you know, that's looking like it's going to, they're going to stay in the single market. They're going to stay in the Court of Justice. Like this is very, like as Brendan O'Neill, friend of the show, says, this is that all these politicians are going to be stand exposed as liars, anti-democrats, betrayers of the public, betrayers of their own party promises. Things might actually, like, you know, we're going to talk about the Gilets Jaunes later in the show, but, like, this is, you know, there could be protests and civil unrest. This is real betrayal.
There is a threat of that. It isn't looking good. Should we move on to the Gilets?
Yeah, let's do it.
So, speaking of protests, the Gilets Jaunes, my French pronunciation is getting better week by week.
Yep.
Ninth week.
Gérard Depardieu. That's mine.
That is, yeah. Mm. So, ninth weekend of protests for these people. It's spread to London. And has kind of melded with pro-Brexit protests, which you would think is kind of a similar type thing, you know, like this anti-establishment type thing. So, pro-Brexit protests. So, a lot of them have started wearing the yellow jackets.
Yeah.
This has caused... It's interesting. It's kind of caused a cultural shock. Like, there's no celebrities have endorsed it. The issues that they're raising are not just economic. Like, they're obviously very economic, but also cultural. They're sort of working class people telling the elites that they exist and that they're there. There's a fellow who did a really great interview with Spiked called, and it's another French name, which I might not pronounce that well, Christophe Gouly.
Mm-hmm.
So it's pretty good. We might get him on the show at some stage if
You're
we can.
You're so proud of yourself. Well, that was pretty good.
I'm pretty sophisticated. Calls this peripheral France, the people who live outside the major cities and who working class, elites sort of see as kind of almost like this Amazonian tribe, the deplorables, if you will. And he said, I'll just read what he wrote. For the first time, this is a movement which cannot be controlled through the normal political mechanisms. The Gilets Jaunes didn't emerge from the trade unions or the political parties. It cannot be stopped. There's no off button. Either the intelligentsia will be forced to properly acknowledge the existence of these people, or they will have to opt for a kind of soft totalitarianism, which is kind of what Brexit is, really.
Yeah, exactly.
If they knock it back and don't really...
Yeah. It is insane the amount of people that are still protesting. Like, there were 84,000 people, which is up 50,000 from previous weeks. It's still, it's not getting stronger. It's not like the original weeks where there was like hundreds of thousands, but like 84 up from 50. It's 9 weeks of protesting. That is incredible. Like,
they love a protest, the French.
They do, yeah.
It's like we love a government breakdown.
Yes.
A government shutdown.
Who loves what more?
I don't know.
This is a question
about
time.
Who loves what more? You're right.
Now, I've got another quote, so we might want to get this guy on the show. So, this guy was talking to the press. He says, I get by on 1,200 euros, or basically just under 2,000 Australian a month, and taxes eat away at my savings every day. They're taking away everything we have. Said Vercingetorix, a 74-year-old retired archaeologist dressed as a legendary Gallic resistor to Roman rule. I have never been more intimidated in my life. There is a man dressed as an ancient Gallic leader, and he's a 74-year-old retired architect roaming the streets of France. I am terrified.
Did you say archaeology or architect?
Archaeologist.
Okay.
So, I'm so intimidated. That guy, if that guy's on the other side, good luck for the French police.
What's the cartoon?
I thought it was from Asterix and Obelix as well, but Vercingetorix is an actual dude. Like, he went to war with Julius Caesar, but...
Well, this is what we're talking about.
That is intimidating. I'd be very scared of that.
Let's get him on as well.
Let's get him on as well, but we'll definitely have to frisk him. I'll frisk you, and then both of us will have to frisk him, and we'll have to figure out where his 17 swords will be stored for the remainder of the interview.
That's right. Put him in Nana's office with all the other weapons.
Okay. All right, that's it for the stuff we're going to talk about at the start of the show. So we're now going to go to Dr. Bella DeBrero talking about her history report, and Anise Wazay, who was with the IPA for a few weeks as part of the Mancow Foundation's program. So she's going to be talking about what Mancow is. Mm. So if you are young, if you are one of our listeners and you are in Western Australia, you want to listen to this because it's a really cool opportunity. She's going to be talking about what it's like to intern here at the IPA. But before we do that, another thing that the IPA got up to over the break, which we should tell you about, John Roskam, his article in the Australian Financial Review, his fortnightly article in the AFR, is back. So this first one is, we're coming up to an election year. It's a big year for Australian politics. Mm. And John Roskam sort of previews it from the outset, saying, like, this is not a policy battle. I mean, it is so interesting, all the Scott Morrison stuff, and he's, like, introducing himself to the Australian public, and he's doing all these things. It seems to be centered on just showing he's a good bloke. Like, he's, like, hanging out with cricketers, and, you know, there was a photo of him celebrating his anniversary, and just, you know, man of the people.
Well, so
what do you think, dude?
I don't know if you're... I'd have to break this to you, James.
Yeah.
But a lot of politicians these days spend a lot of time on the image.
Are you serious?
Mm.
Really?
Yep.
Man, that's weird. Anyway, that's not exactly what John Roskam's article is about. So you go to ipa.org.au to read all about it. Thank you so much for listening and subscribing out there to all our listeners. Make sure you're telling your friends and family about the show. Keep the people going. Remember, we are coming out on Tuesdays from now on. And if you are listening through iTunes, anyone can listen through any podcast app. But if you are listening through iTunes, make sure you're leaving us that 5-star review. It really helps us out with the ratings, bringing new people to the show.
That's right.
You can also leave a comment in... nearly said a comment for us in the tips, but it's the tips for us.
First week back.
Yeah.
A bit rusty.
We're all a bit rusty. Just shaking it off. Nina, how can people become members of the IPA or donate to the IPA if they already are members and they like what they do?
Can I just make a comment about Nina first?
I'm falling apart.
It's Nina's birthday.
Is it actually?
Yesterday.
On what? Sunday.
Sunday.
Happy birthday, Nina.
Q&A clap.
Okay. Thank you.
That's how I
celebrate birthdays.
Finally, I just play that audio file. Q&A club.
Yeah. All right. There we go. But how can people become members?
Oh, just visit the website, so ipa.org.au, and click on a donate button if you like to donate some money. Or if you want to join, just click on the join button. And starting as low as $22 per year, you can become one of the loudest voice of freedom in Australia.
Fantastic. Pete and I are rusty. That was not rusty, by the
way.
That was just hitting the ground. Full stride.
Nina's a professional.
Nina holds this podcast up.
How was your break, Nina?
It was good.
That was fascinating.
This is podcast gold.
I don't even want to go to these interviews, but we have to. So let's go to them now. Okay, we now welcome back onto the show, great friend of the show, Dr. Bella DeBrera. Always a pleasure to have you back.
Thank you. It's wonderful to be back in 2019. Happy New Year.
Yes.
Happy New Year to you too,
Any
Dr.
New Year's
Bella.
Resolutions, Dr. Bella?
Just work harder for the IPA.
No. Oof. All right. That's
she already works really hard.
That is a company line right there. All right. Let's talk about it because you've got 2019 off to a roaring start for this New Year's resolution. We've got the new report, Australian History's Last Stand, an audit of Australian history teaching at universities. Now, we've been sort of doing reports like this for a while, and it's looking at how history is being taught in Australian universities, what our students are learning about, and the findings are not that great. So, Bella, talk us through, what are the findings?
This is a report looking at how Australian history is being taught, not history in general.
Is that what I said?
No, you said history.
Oh, okay.
That's good. Well, that's why she's in charge.
Yeah, this is why you do the report and I do the bad summarising of what the report's about.
Exactly. So you're nearly right. It's history, but specifically Australian history.
It's better than I usually get. Sorry. We'll stop. We will momentarily stop interrupting you.
That's fine. So there were 147 subjects. This is all last year that were taught across 35 universities that all offer history programs and specifically Australian history subjects. And surprise, surprise, the majority of subjects look at either class, race or gender. So very much identity politics dominated, just like history in general. So the report that I did the previous year that found that, you know, 3/4 of the subjects were identity politics. So it's the same old thing. And it was very unsurprising, but it was slightly worse because not only are they talking about identity politics, they're talking about modern day politics and it's like a political and social commentary on Australia rather than an examination of the past. So if you go to university to study Australian history, you won't learn anything.
So one of the things I noticed about the report was that I get that there's a big thing about identity politics, right?
Mm.
But also one of the key things you said was that the individual has been omitted from history studies. Do you want to talk through that a little bit, please?
Yes. Well, one of the results of identity politics is that the individual is unimportant.
Yeah.
Because identity politics looks at the world in terms of the collective. The individual has no role in that. So in all the 147 subjects, I was shocked, actually, that not one single prime minister is mentioned in any of the course descriptions, either Labour or Liberals. So it's not even political anymore.
But Pauline Hanson gets mentioned three times.
But then again, when you do, you know, when you do a search, Pauline Hanson, who's obviously alive and well and kicking, is mentioned three times. So that just shows where the interests of the academics lie, which is now, not 100 years ago.
Or potentially that Pauline Hanson is just a bigger force in history than Menzies.
But she's not even history, it's the present.
Yeah, exactly. So this brings out a point, because like looking at like classes and not doing away with individuals is a really Marxist way of viewing history. Yeah. And this is something that came out in the video that we released about this report, which I think I've said earlier in the show. It's available on our Facebook, YouTube, Twitter pages if you want to go check it out. But how did this sort of Marxist interpretation of history now find its way into Australian universities so dominantly?
Well, in Australia specifically, it's not... It's the identity politics idea is Marxist, but the idea of the historian as a political commentator is not really Marxist. It's Foucault. It's the Frenchman. It's the 1960s. It's his idea that the only reason to look at the past is by changing the present, is by empowering victims, by empowering minorities, and by righting wrongs of the past. So he says historians have to be political activists, and that ideology and that philosophy has completely dominated the study of Australia's history since the 60s, and has now sort of become the thing, the way that Australians historians view themselves. So it's not so much Marxist, it's more sort of postmodernist. It's French philosopher Foucault.
That's interesting. So that difference between postmodernism and Marxism. The other thing I noticed, which you said was a big thing, was that liberalism has basically been written out of history in Australian universities.
Yes, which is remarkable. So again, looking at the words, looking at the things that they talk about, liberalism is not mentioned once.
Yeah, okay.
I think democracy is mentioned two or three times,
okay,
if you're lucky.
A couple of times.
Demos. So, you do an under 3 years of studying Australian history, you'll come out the other end having absolutely no idea about the liberal foundations of Australian as a modern nation. You've got no idea about it, which is quite terrifying, because as I mentioned in the report, like if you stop looking at past events and you stop looking at the past, how can you learn from that, and then how can you make decisions about the present if you only know about identity politics? How's that going to help anyone? And again, those subjects are
fine.
It
will help you get retweets.
It will help you get a job in the public service as well. They're fine in their own particular space, but stop selling it as history. It should be in politics, or it should be in sociology, but it should not be in history.
Mm-hmm.
They need to relabel what the subjects are. I don't mind if they want to teach this stuff. Just don't. It's like a defrauding of the undergraduates who are paying their fees to go and learn about Australian history and are coming out with no knowledge of the past at all.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. All right, that sounds completely sensible to Pete and I. It most likely would sound completely sensible to all of our listeners. But when you do these reports, you do get some blowback, a lot from teachers and academic types. Have you got much blowback from this report?
Because, of course, fresh from Sky Studios.
I haven't any yet, actually, because it's
impenetrable.
It's hard to argue with the data.
Yeah.
They can't argue with the fact that their research interests, and you look at the research interests of the historians, the academics, and it is class, race, and gender. They can't deny that.
Mm.
But then they simply have to defend why they're just focused solely on that version of the past.
Yep.
So that they're quite silent, but I do know that the previous report made quite deep inroads into history departments.
Cool.
But I only found out that sort of months later and via other people. They won't come to me directly.
What? Talk us through that.
You're a terrifying person.
Yeah, terrifying.
What? Talk us through that. So you heard from another academic.
Yeah, I've heard from various people, in chats with people that your report made has they've all read it.
And cool.
It's made an impact. I mean, it's not going to change how they teach. It's not going to change what they teach.
But ideally, you'd have like a lot of students who would see it and go like, hang on, so I can have more than this. Like
yes.
If they're thinking this Australian history degree I'm pursuing, I'm not getting anything out of it. And now they've got evidence as to why. So hopefully down the line we can start hiring a few different people.
But the point of these reports is that there's not an immediate thing. Like, it takes a while for the reports to do the rounds and to be sent from one place to the next. And it's a sort of a slow burn thing. So I expect even in a year's time I'll be getting some kind of response from it. So it's interesting. It doesn't have a sudden impact. It's not like a tweet.
Yes, yeah, with all the retweets sort of from the identity politics people.
But it makes a difference after a while.
Yeah, right, Foucault in the 60s now, De Brera coming through now, take time.
Well, I was thinking when Marx...
offset that whole thing.
Well, Marx took like 30 years for Workers of the World United to get off the ground.
Yeah,
so,
it's pretty much the same sort of time.
Yeah, and same sort of impact. Yeah. And sorry, if you want to be one of the first to this report and be at the ground floor of the report's impact? You can go read this report, ipa.org.au. The report is Australian History's Last Stand, an audit of Australian history teaching at universities. You can also check out the video on all of our social media pages. But Bella, let's change tracks if we can, because we've all just had a break. We've had a very relaxing break, some of us. But Bella's done an audit of boxing classes, I understand.
I did an audit of one boxing class, one Muay Thai boxing class in Bangkok.
Yeah?
Muay Thai?
Yeah.
Cool.
It was fantastic.
So you're a killing machine now.
I don't know
how quickly could you kill Pete Knight.
I don't know if 2 hours qualifies me as being a killing machine. 2 hours with a private coach. He didn't speak any English at all.
But you showed me the video.
He spoke to Werner. He said same, which meant that I had to copy what he did.
Yep.
And hot foot. Which was I had to sort of pivot on my toes when I was doing the side kicks.
Right.
It took me a while to figure out what hot foot was.
Okay.
Oh, and marching as well. So marching, because you have to march while you. You don't stand still while you're doing this Thai boxing. You have to march on the spot the whole time.
Yeah, this is very intimidating.
It was very, very, very hot because it's Bangkok, it's outside, it's the tropics. I was just the reddest face in the world. And I don't often get a red face.
Yeah, but it was just the searing anger
you
had.
And
the sense of righteous justice from deploying your roundhouse kick after roundhouse kick.
My favorite move was the elbow in the face. Do you know that one, Nina? Yeah,
Nina hasn't got a microphone. She said maybe.
All right, Pete. Official podcast note: be nicer to Bella.
This is
keep them on side. Nina's throwing elbows behind the desk. She's just plotting, just sizing herself, knowing potential weak spots. Especially with the size of my head, there is so much space for the elbows to land on.
Get over the size of your head,
mate. No one can. It's a big head.
Bella, what were you doing in Bangkok just on holiday?
Yes, I was just on holiday. Yeah. I saw some friends and went to Singapore as well. And
it's a good cover for your real interest in becoming the killing machine that you are now.
Well, while I was away, I googled kickboxing classes in Melbourne.
Yeah,
and there's a studio in Bourke Street which I'm going to join.
Ooh,
this is your new hobby.
Yeah, this is my new hobby. It lasts 6 months, and I'll get reasonably good at it and then move on to something else.
Yeah, because the bodies will start piling up and people start asking questions. All right, but before then, Dr. Bella Brera, thank you very much for joining us on the show. Make sure everyone out there is going and reading the report.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Dr. Bella.
Okay, we now welcome on to the show Anise Rezae, who is interning with us through the Mancal Economic Education Foundation. Anise, welcome to the show.
Thank you, James. Thank you, Pete.
Now, this is bit of an exit interview because, Anise, this is your last week here. So,
it's my last day.
Your last day, even. So anything you say, there's going to be absolutely no consequences. Okay. So if you want to cut sick at any point, feel free to use that energy. Don't hold back at all. Now, first off, some of our listeners might not know what the Mancal Foundation is. Do you want to describe what that whole thing's about?
Yep. So Mancal is a Perth-based think tank. They sponsor students to intern at various international and domestic think tanks around the world. So I'm lucky enough to be interning at the IPA for 6 weeks, and I'm heading off to CIS for another 4 weeks. So that's all thanks to Ron Manners and the Mancal team.
How is Big Ron doing over there in WA?
He's doing well. He is.
Yep.
Yep. He's fantastic. Doing really well. It was his 84th.
No,
if I'm not wrong. Birthday.
I wouldn't have said he's a day over 50. That is, I'm very surprised. That's how old he is.
And I think that was 2 days ago.
So. Okay. Well, that's even older.
Happy birthday to Ron.
Yeah. Happy birthday to Ron. So, what attracted you to the IPA? Like, why'd you want to come work here, and maybe why'd you want to go work at the CIS as well?
So, I've been reading the IPA research for a few years now. I met Matthew Lesh and Simon a few years back when they were in Perth, and really enjoying the content that's coming out of IPA, especially for young readers over in Perth, because we don't have a libertarian think tank.
Yeah, well, we're, you know, both of those things.
Yeah.
Yes. And CIS, because, I mean, they've been doing great work in terms of, you know, research into regulations and childcare, which is what I'm going to be looking into in the next couple of weeks.
That is very interesting. So you said you liked reading the IPA research.
Mm-hmm.
What's it like? No, just kidding. I read it too. No, what?
You wrote some of it, Pete. No, I worked very hard here.
Who is your favourite? What's your most interesting area? You sort of mentioned childcare a second there, but what kind of stuff are you really interested in?
I'm really interested in legal rights. So I'm currently studying Juris Doctor, which is a postgrad law degree.
Very cool.
So I'm really interested in legal rights.
Mm-hmm.
I've been doing some work with Morgan Begg into... we've been working on the legal rights audit, which was really interesting. And we're also doing some work into the Integrity Commission that's been proposed by the Coalition. So, you know, really interesting stuff.
Cool. So you're Australia's first non-left-wing lawyer. We will be once you finish.
Yeah, hopefully.
Very cool.
Very cool. So, yeah, you spoke about how you are working for Morgan here. Now, long-time listeners of our show know that Morgan swings wildly between great friend of the show and then sworn mortal enemy.
And frenemy.
Yeah, and often within the space of a few minutes, he swings through these things. So what has been the experience working for Morgan been?
Morgan's really nice.
What? She's laughing.
That was so strange. Morgan is standing behind a niece.
Morgan is probably the nicest person at the IPA.
He actually is. Like, we joke about it. He's actually the nicest person in the world.
And that's been confirmed by Shani, who's a previous intern. At the IPA. So all the interns love Morgan.
Okay. Well,
man of the people.
There you go.
And how have you found working for the IPA as a whole?
IPA is such a great team. Honestly, I didn't expect to make such great friends when I walked through the doors 6 weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
But everyone from the top down, Scott, John, Sean, have
all the way down to us, to me and James.
You pointed yourself into a hole there because you started naming individuals. I'm like, such an interesting decision. Yeah. Such an interesting decision. Yep.
So even the cellar dwellers like me and James are fun to hang out with. Sorry, go on.
Well, as I was going to say, and James and Pete have all been, you know, really nice, really helpful. So it's been a great experience and hopefully I'll be back.
Excellent. That sounds cool. So obviously you're off to the CIS, or as you were saying earlier, the NCIS. see how that goes. So after that, you'll
be able... that was funny, but like the problem is like we've been joking about that for like an hour now. So just like in the room, it's like, yeah, that is something.
Yeah,
like,
anyway. So, but you will be able to say now, once you've worked at both, which one's the better think tank.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a lot of responsibility.
No pressure.
Yeah.
None.
I'll let you guys know in 4 weeks.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, what are the things you're going to be looking for in the CIS to replicate? Like, what are the things that the IPA has as far as, like, community goes and the stuff we do that you'd be like, I wonder if CIS has the same sort of minty bowl in the front of the office?
She hasn't worked there yet. She's still got to try and, you know.
Yeah. But I'm just saying, like, what are the things she's looking for in the CIS?
Can you tell us if they've got minties, by the way?
I will let you guys know. Because I might transfer. If they have some sort of confectionery.
Yep.
At their, you know, entrance.
Yep.
Also, whether they take me to lunch.
Yeah, we're fresh off Anissa's goodbye lunch, which was delicious. Shout out to Italian food. all right, so last question we got here. Sorry, we got a lot of young listeners out there, and maybe they heard about what Mancow does for you and what Mancow's done for a lot of other people we've had. Shani, you mentioned Jesse Palmer, like a whole lot of people have come through the IPA through Mancow.
Mm.
So do you know how people can get involved with Mancow and how they can start applying for these things?
People over in WA.
Yeah.
Yep. So it's a really, you know, super easy process. They have to be a university student, you know, undergrad or postgrad, and they can apply for, you know, a range of conferences, internships. Just get involved into libertarian ideas and, you know, conversations, really.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you go from there. You might end up, you know, at some think tank over in America over the summer break. You know, doing some, meeting some people and doing some, you know, really great work.
Fantastic. That actually reminds me, we forgot to ask Anise why she was attracted to the idea of what would we call it?
Liberty.
Liberty. Good one. You'll go far. Thank you. What first attracted you to the idea of liberty and things like that? And organisations like ManCal and the IPA? And...
I met a few people who were really, far ahead than, what the university was offering in terms of ideas and, what they were teaching, really. So I met Shani, some, really great thinkers, really. And that's how I got involved. So I got involved through, the ManCal staff, but you can, look at their website and you can look at all their, great sort of like, I think they do newsletters that they produce, and Ron has a blog. So, you can go on there and read that stuff, and that's how you can, really get involved with ManCal.
Yep.
All right, cool. And I have one final question. So okay. You mentioned that you did like working with me and Pete before, but I am going to have to make you choose. So out of the two of us, remember, last day, there's no consequences for anything you say.
Yeah. Who do
you
like more? And even if it wasn't the last day.
Yeah. Who do you like more? And make sure you can say it very slowly so I can edit out the fact that you actually said me, no matter what you say.
Well, I didn't really get to work closely with either of you guys.
Yeah, it's a nil draw.
Advice. As most contests between us often are, it's a nil draw.
But it depends who has the best memes.
Who's the bigger meme?
Well, I don't really do memes.
Nah.
Because I'm too old. But James's memes are crap.
You gave it a laugh react. I don't know if we could
say that, on the podcast. Anyway.
You can't say it because it's not true. That's why you can't say it.
Anyway,
I take that to be me. Is it me? It's me. You can just say me. Just say...
I think that you need this more, so you can say, James. It's fine.
I'm coming up a little strong.
All right. Well.
All right, cool. All right, Anise, thank you so much. Hopefully, yes, you are back at the IPA soon. It's been great having you, and thank you for indulging us in this exit interview.
Thank you for having me, and thank you to John and Scott.
No problem. On their behalf.
Okay, thank you to Dr. Bella DeBrera and Anise Rizet for those interviews. Make sure you're reading Dr. Bella DeBrera's report on ipa.org.au or watching the video on all of our social media accounts. Now, let's run through some stories that we've got at the end, but we'll start with the segment. It's becoming a bit of a regular thing, and I'm liking it a lot. Pete's Here's a Cool Thing.
Well, is it always me?
Yes.
Okay.
All right. Yep. It's a good energy for the start of the year. Already trying to get out of his own segment.
I wasn't trying to get out of it. I was just trying to make the point that I'm I'm an optimistic guy. I'm always finding
I'm an
the
optimistic
happy
guy. That's why I asked out of it.
Yeah.
Why is it
why
always
do I have
me?
To do all the work? No.
I'm optimistic about my own laziness.
I just wanted to check if it was me or if it was just... No, it is my topic. It's my segment. All right, here's a cool thing. Nicholas Kristof in the New York Times, a famous commentator, Nicholas Kristof in the New York Times, wrote a piece at the end of the year about how 2018 was the best year on record. And he had a lot of good stats in there about things that were great that had happened in the world. So let's quickly run through. You're probably pretty familiar, but let's go through them. And I've added a couple on the end, which I found out myself. Each day on average, another 295,000 people in 2018 around the world gained access to electricity for the first time. Another 305,000 people were able to access clean drinking water for the first time. An additional 620,000 people were able to get online for the first time. Children today in Mexico or Brazil, James and Nina, are less likely to die by the age of 5 than American children were as recently as 1970. Interesting. Now, what is interesting, what he also raises, is that a lot of people actually don't realise this and have the perception that the world is getting worse. For example, 9 out of 10 Americans say in polls that global poverty is worsening or staying the same, when that is clearly not true. Up until the 1950s, a majority of humans had always lived in extreme poverty. In the early 1980s, that was 44%. Fewer than 10% of the world's population currently live in extreme poverty. I'll give you a few more, because I know that, this is a great segment. Americans estimate that 35% of the world's children have been vaccinated. In fact, 86% of all the world's one-year-olds have been vaccinated. Three nations registered astounding progress against authoritarianism and poor governance in 2018. They were Armenia, Ethiopia, and Malaysia. We should do some more work on that in this coming year. Global suicide rates are 38%. Now, this is from Tom Palmer. Global suicide rates are 38% of what they were in 94. Friend of the podcast. Number of war fatalities are half of what they were 4 years ago. The number of extremely poor was reduced by 127,000 every day in 2018. And the first efficient treatment for Alzheimer's seems to have been discovered.
That's a big one. That last one.
The last one.
The others there. Who cares? But yeah. That is such a great article because, yeah. you know, everything's falling apart. Like, we, you know, in the early in the show, we're talking about, like, Brexit might lead to protests and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And then you just got to sit back and go, oh, like, there's a lot of stuff that is actually really good.
It is good to retain perspective at times.
Now, let's go back into making mountains out of molehills.
Yeah, yeah. Let's everything's
fun.
Don't get too carried away. The thing is still stuffed, James.
Yes. Well, here's what we got. So, one person who's not having a great 2019 so far is Jeff Bezos.
Okay.
So, he's gone through a lot right now. He's getting divorced. No prenup. So, that's, I think, $70 billion down the drain.
Does that mean...
I think she's already... She now becomes the richest woman in the world because of this divorce settlement.
Oh, really?
Anyway, his courting messages to his new lover have gone public, including the timeless classic, I love you, alive girl.
Alive girl?
Alive girl. That's what he texted the new girl. I love you, alive girl. Which, to be honest, Jeff Bezos, he's at Amazon, spending a lot of time around robots. Must be, you know, he would want to know. It's something... He spends a lot of time with people that aren't alive.
That's... It's a pretty low bar, isn't it?
Yeah. But, like, for him, it's a big distinction.
Yeah.
And it's one of those traps, because robots can't lie to people. So if he says, I love you, alive girl, that's like... And she says, well, actually, I'm a robot.
Yeah.
That's how he finds out.
And look, AI can't replace everything, can it?
No, especially not love. But or fiery hatred, which is what Donald Trump has for Jeff Bezos.
Yep.
And he delivered probably, I'd say, one of his more withering ones. Sorry to hear the news about Jeff Bozo being taken down by a competitor. Goes on, it's a bit like the Washington Post thing, which they've always had a long-standing thing. But Jeff Bozo.
It's great that
that's... Put that in a like art museum.
It's great that the leader of the free world is interested in that kind of stuff.
Yes.
Can I ask? So he definitely thought of that himself. There's no way that's an aide.
No, no. Trump comes up with his own goods.
Are they,
he writes his own material.
Do they have to... Does he want to send out like 30 of these a day and they just, you know, curtail it down to his favourite couple?
Who knows? But all... Like, you seem to have taken a different one. I want this in the lobby of his presidential museum.
Oh, so you're... Yeah, okay, okay. Yep,
like, that should be the first thing you see. Jeff Bozo.
Yeah, like, you know, JFK was it... Who was JFK? Ask not what... Anyway,
yeah,
I don't know.
But, well, Jeff Bezos just rolls off the tongue. You can't even remember the joke.
That's right. Well, there you go. You can't argue with that. Why does he dislike this guy again? If you
Amazon owns the Washington Post, which is pretty anti-Trump.
Okay.
And so Trump just follows the money back to Jeff Bezos. And like, you know, that whole stuff when they got into the stash and was like, oh, there's going to be tariffs because of Amazon. Like, that was bad. But Jeff Bezos, no one really gets hurt by that. I'm going to enjoy it.
It's quite a hurt.
I was going to say, in the Trump... like in the all-time Trump withering insults, where
anthology.
Does Jeff Bezos rank? I have that just beneath low energy Jeb.
Yeah, the ones when he was...
It's above little Marco Rubio for me, because that little Marco Rubio. But yeah, nothing's ever going to beat low energy Jeb.
The ones that when he was in the nominee race were pretty good.
Yeah.
I mean, it was Crooked Hillary.
Crooked Hillary, low energy Jeb, little Marco Rubio, lying Ted Cruz, and someone was sweaty. Right. No, that was Marco Rubio. He's like talking about, I've never seen someone sweat so much in my life. But well, that's what he does. Like, yeah. I will never be able to look at a photo of Jeb Bush ever again without thinking of low energy.
Yeah, well.
And yeah.
What about, what's his name?
Jeff Bezos?
Yeah.
Mate,
there you
good
go.
Luck to him. Because Jeff Bezos, that will follow him.
Well, we wish him all the best with his divorce.
yes. And if you ever want to divorce me, I'll only ask for $35 billion.
Yeah.
So that's just on the table for you, Jeff Bezos. Come back to me with an offer. Sorry, Pete.
What an offer.
It's my final offer. Not going anywhere around that.
Yeah.
Cool. Do you want to take one?
Oh, yeah.
All right, just... I'll pitch in while you figure out what you want to do. All right.
Yeah.
Anyway, sorry. In the US, the new season of Celebrity Big Brother has been announced.
And I know.
Pete religiously follows the show.
Yeah.
No spoilers for Pete as this thing goes on because he watches it on delay. He likes to binge it after the season finishes.
Exactly right.
But anyway, so we're making jokes. Like, I don't really... I don't watch reality TV. But anyway,
I want to explain...
Really? Good. So, cast list.
Okay.
Here it is. The only one I recognized, to be honest, was Ryan Lochte, former US swimmer. The guy that like got in trouble because he faked that he got robbed in Brazil when actually he just got drunk and lost his car or whatever that was.
Okay.
Anyway, the other one, Anthony Scaramucci.
You kidding me?
I'm not kidding you at
all. What's his program again?
Celebrity Big Brother. Anthony Scaramucci. And those sunglasses are going to be lording around the Big Brother house like no one's business.
So he's just got a little gap in his timetable for a few weeks.
Well, he's big on how to fill little gaps. He was only at the White House for 11 days, so he's a man that is short stints and bursts.
Yep.
That's how he operates on things. But Scaramucci and Celebrity Big Brother is going to be electric television. Like the stuff he, in one journalistic article, in one interview with a journalist, he got all of the quotes that we now associate with Scaramucci, none of which I can repeat on a family-friendly podcast, but we know what he's capable of.
Oh.
In a Celebrity Big Brother stint,
I can't.
With alcohol,
yeah,
this could go anywhere.
So, and you're saying you don't know anyone else, you can't recognize anyone else?
Not on the Celebrity Big Brother. It was like, there was like a contestant on the Real Housewives of Atlanta. I don't even know if they're
not,
called contestants.
You don't watch that?
No, I'm not a huge fan. More of a Real Housewives of New Jersey kind of guy. But yeah, Anthony Scaramucci. The other one I was going to say, this leads into, have you seen the cast for Australia's I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here?
Believe it or not, I haven't. I've sort of heard.
Friend of the show, Sam Dastyari.
No way. Yeah. Really?
Yeah. Once again, cool. He's gone to a foreign land in an effort to achieve fame and power.
Okay. Well,
I don't know if I could keep that, but
we'll see.
If there was a weird cut to silence there, then people will know.
We'll see what the boys in legal say.
Yeah. So that will also be electric television. So my question for the panel of Pete and Nina is which politician would be matched the best with a particular reality TV show? I've got a few ideas.
I don't know many TV shows.
I thought you can say
I don't know any
politicians.
Of them.
Clive Palmer on Survivor.
Oh.
That would be fantastic.
Yeah.
To just, well, just not only, you know, because not only for the obvious reasons, but also just having him watch negotiate, having him lose a torch ceremony, I think would lead to an all-time meltdown.
That'd be good.
And speaking of all-time meltdowns, Kevin Rudd on The Amazing Race.
Yeah.
Because The Amazing Race, they'll always have one person meltdown in an airport.
Yeah.
And if there's one thing we know about Kevin Rudd, not a fan of delayed planes.
I reckon Kevin Rudd on any of them would be good.
The Bachelor, I'd watch that. Oh. I'd watch Kevin Rudd on Australian Idol. I definitely would watch that.
One of the cooking ones.
Yeah. MasterChef.
Yeah.
Man, could you imagine like him getting a bad review to his face and a camera's on him?
Yeah.
Oh.
It'd be like that video where he's trying to say Happy New Year in Chinese or something.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Yeah, cool. Yeah, that'd be great.
Well, let's keep us updated on that, right? Yeah, because that's really good.
All right, cool. Now, Pete.
Yeah, so obviously I've got one. We've talked a bit about Brexit. This is the real Brexit story coming out of the UK over the break. Neil Warnock, manager of Cardiff City, speaking following his side's nil-all draw with Huddersfield. What a thing to be speaking after. Dismissed claims that Brexit will make it harder for Premier League clubs to sign players. So amongst all the other, you know, the sky's falling in predictions about Brexit. It's going to be a bit harder for Premier League clubs to sign players, allegedly. He said...
Will someone think of the multimillionaires trying to sign other multimillionaires?
Someone think of, that.
Yeah.
Anyway, he rejected that claim. He said, I think once the country knows what they're doing, it will be straightforward. Any transfer window is difficult for me, not just this one. I don't know why politicians don't do what the country wants. If I'm honest, they had a referendum and now you see different politicians and everyone else trying to put their foot in it. Why do we have a referendum in the first bloody place? I can't wait to get out of it. If I'm honest, he's talking about the EU. I think we'll be far better off out of this bloody thing in every aspect, football-wise as well, absolutely. To hell with the rest of the world.
That's a little isolationist for me at the end there, but I get the idea.
I think it's pretty obvious what needs to happen.
Yeah.
Neil Warnock for PM.
Yeah. Giving him a yellow jacket for his next match.
It seems pretty obvious to me.
My thing with this is, if I get annoyed when the fourth lead on Twilight starts talking about what US economic and tax reforms should happen, I can't then go ahead and praise Cardiff City manager, whatever he's, Neil Warnock.
That's too much consistency for mine.
No, well, I just like, you know, stick to soccer.
And
by the way, like, as you say, he following a nil all draw with Huddersfield, which I just looked up, is the last team... Like, they're last in the standings.
Yeah.
Good way to deflect from why the hell did you make us watch that match, mate, is to go on a Brexit rant.
Well...
I'm the story.
I don't often say this, James, but you're completely wrong.
Oh.
This
Huddersfield are last.
I don't mind celebrities...
I would not want to watch...
Celebrities.
...the whole draw featuring Huddersfield Town.
In Cardiff. But Cardiff is 17th, just above the drop zone. I don't mind celebrities commenting on stuff if they say things I agree with.
Oh, right. Okay.
So
that in itself is consistency. As long as they consistently agree with you, it's fine.
It's fine. Yeah. And I think he should be the new leader.
Okay. Well, agree to disagree.
I never liked Neil Warnock until now.
All right. I got another one for you. So this is a weird one. And not a huge political point to be made, but
that's all right.
A lot of people, I think I've gone on a few rants like this.
Yeah.
There are absolutely no good social media managers out there.
No.
Except me.
Well.
And yeah. here's a good one for you. So Takis, or Takis or something, but anyway, they're basically an off brand of Doritos. But from what I've never heard of them, but they're like potato chips.
Just a sort of chip scenario.
Yeah, you know where they are. You've seen a chip.
Yeah, I've seen a
You've seen a chip. So Takis chip. Anyway, so someone on Twitter, if someone tweeted, if someone wants to send me a package full of Takis, I'd seriously love it. Love you. I'd pay for it too. And so someone then quote tweets this, probably made of theirs, and says, "Hey Takis USA," which is their official handle. "Hey Takis USA, can you help this active duty serviceman out? Apparently Kuwait has anything but delicious Takis. Big old smiley face. Hashtag help this man out."
Okay.
That is the most open layup in the history of the world. Just send this man some Takis.
Yep.
We're all happy.
Couple of snaps.
Yep. Takis replies, "Sorry, no free Takis. Thanks for being a fan."
That is such a clanger.
That's a clanger.
It's like, you know, yeah. I don't know what to... Yeah.
Sorry, like, I look through Takis' Twitter feed, and it's usually like, you know, they'll respond to customers. Like, they basically respond... If you send Takis a tweet, they will respond. There's one of those social media accounts, but it's like, yeah. Oh, you know, oh, sorry to hear that about your order, you know, or like, oh, Takis is available at this store in your area.
Research,
yeah, and that's like, you know, three likes, two likes, one like. This one, 6,000 retweets and 35,000 likes.
It's like, no exceptions. I like that. Tough school. No free Takis, mate.
No free Takis.
I don't care who you are.
Mate, where's your, like, a serviceman? Give me a Medal of Honor, but then we can talk. Yeah. But until then, no free Takis.
Where's the sign?
Don't make me tap it again.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I'm just going to quote my brother here. "You were meant to promote fan interaction, but instead everyone thinks we hate all troops."
Hang on. So he wrote that to Takis?
No, as in, like, that would be the Takis social media manager. Yeah. Can you step in here for a second?
What have you done?
Why are we now in a war with the US Army?
So, when did that happen?
This was 6 days ago.
And did they give him any?
I don't know any update, but I think their cards were played. I don't think he can back down from that statement.
No, I'm fine
Trump
with that.
Trump can't back down from Jeff Bozo, and Takis cannot back down. If this serviceman ever eats a Takis again, Takis will have to fall on its own sword. Because they said. No, I also like, it's no like... I'd pay, like the guy said, I'd pay for it. Suddenly they're like, oh, another active serviceman wanting something free.
Yeah. It's not, he's kind of, it's like, we're not selling Takis anymore. Like, he will pay for the Takis.
He will pay for it. Anyway, there are no good social media managers. That is it for the show this week. So thanks again to Dr. Bella Debrera and Anise Wazay for those.
I thought official predictions.
Yes. Okay. So first show, good Pete. Mate. Good. First show back for the year. There's a whole year to preview. Last year we had the review. Last episode was a review. Hope you guys enjoyed the best of the show. But this year's, this week we should do a preview. Let's look into the crystal ball. Let's get some official predictions for what the year ahead is going to do.
Did we do this last year?
I don't think so.
Okay.
Last episode this year, 2019, obviously. Don't know why I talked myself into a wormhole
really
there.
Paused on that.
I really, put myself in the jackpot there. But anyway, last year of the show, I think we'll look back at some of these predictions and see how they went.
I think we should.
Sorry, let's all get the crystal ball out. And who wants to start?
I reckon Anna should start.
Nina?
Me?
Chris, official prediction.
Official predictions that I'll conquer the world.
Nina will conquer the world.
I will lead the world. It's in one of the right rules.
Yeah.
What's that? What's
I'm building a plan now.
What's the secret? The thing where it's like, man, if you speak something into existence, it will.
Oh yeah, something like that.
We're seeing it in lifetime.
Yeah.
Nina has said it. The wheels are in motion.
And she's not.
We'll see hug at your the family. End. We'll see under the end of 2019.
Hug your family close.
She's not joking.
All I say to our listeners. Hug your family close.
People think this is Nina being funny. Coming.
She's I'll be not. Rule with my
Nina's eyes. Off. Yeah, Nina's eyes turned a different color when she said she'll rule the world. Like that really came from somewhere within her. That was not a passing comment.
True.
Well, Pete, do you have something slightly less terrifying? Or
do you know what? Nina kind of stole my thunder a bit because one of my predictions
was that Nina was going to rule the world.
It was that Nina will start a cult.
Oh well.
So maybe that's
the part. That's a great prediction. That's pretty much the same.
I think Nina already has a cult following, so I think all she has to do is declare herself a deity.
I thought you two are my followers already.
Yeah, no. See, now what you've done
is
got us into trouble with a head honcho over here.
Whatever you say, supreme leader. No, so that's my first one. My second prediction, and this is far more serious, well, not really, but I think at the end of the day, we'll actually get a good result with Brexit. Whatever it is, whatever the result is, I don't know what it will be, but we'll actually be like, yeah,
that is
good.
Extremely optimistic. And that flows into my first
the people
prediction
will win.
For me, second referendum. I've been talking about it. People have poo-pooed it. I reckon there will be a... Oh, because like I brought it up with...
It's a bit vulgar, mate.
Yeah. I brought it up with Douglas Murray, brought it up with Brendan O'Neill. Okay. Will there be a second referendum? Both of them said no. Yeah. I'm not backing off. I think there is going to be a second referendum. And Brendan O'Neill had an article saying he's starting to warm to the idea.
Yeah.
I think second referendum.
Well,
and this is an unofficial prediction. I don't want to be marked on this one.
You can't have unofficial predictions.
Damn it. All right. Well, I guess we'll never know.
Just make it.
No.
Well, the thing is, so with that fits in with mine because I'm saying it's a good result. So even if there is a second referendum,
we can both win.
Leave will win again.
Yeah. So
we can both win.
Yeah, we can both win here. Because if it's a second referendum, one of us has to win.
I want you to lose.
Okay.
and me to win.
Yeah.
No, that's all right.
No, that's fair. That's fair. But like, I think we can both win with this prediction.
Yeah.
Second prediction, Kanye West officially announces that he's going to be run for president.
Okay.
That is a prediction.
Which party?
Independent.
Oh, okay.
I reckon he's going to be independent. And my third prediction, bring it back to home, I reckon Peter Gregory will finish his PhD.
No chance.
long time listeners of the show, long time listeners
really,
of the show.
Really long listeners.
We'll remember we used to joke about Pete finishing his PhD, and then the joke started to wear a bit thin.
No, that's
true. But I'm bringing back my official prediction, Peter Gregory, mere weeks away from finishing his PhD.
Really close. I have a party.
May
30. Like 52 weeks.
Okay.
I know. All right. May 30.
Okay, mate.
May 30. That's a cutoff line. That is my Brexit cutoff line, is May 30.
Yeah, okay.
Peter Gregory will finish his PhD.
It depends what you mean submit.
I reckon, I get to say, welcome to the Young IPA podcast with Dr. Peter Gregory.
Wow, I don't think, that takes a long time for them to mark it. So I've got to submit it, then I've got to mark it.
Wish I knew that. I thought it was like my uni degree.
They might mark it
2 days later.
They might mark it
quickly. H3 back.
Let's P.
They get degrees.
Players get degrees. No, yeah. Well, we'll see. Maybe they'll mark it quickly.
All right, cool. That is officially it for the end of the show. So thank you to Dr. Bella de Berra and Anise Vizay. Make sure you are listening. Make sure you are reading Dr. Bella de Berra. Make sure. First week back. Come on.
Sorry, Rusty.
Nina. Supreme Leader Nina. Stop looking at me like that. Supreme Leader Nina has a ring to it.
She knows that.
Will work well for the presidential cult following. But anyway, so make sure you're reading Dr. Bella de Abrera's report. Really had to sound that one out. On the IPA website, ipa.org.au, Australian History's Last Stand. And thank you so much for listening and subscribing. Make sure you're still getting the word out. Available on any good podcast app. And if you are listening through iTunes, make sure you're leaving us a 5-star review.
Yeah.
Helps us out with the ratings. And Nina, how can people, if they like the podcast, if they like Dr. Bella de Abrera's report and they want to help the IPA out, what can they do?
Well, you can help us by donating or by signing up someone to become a member and visit our website, ipa.org.au. Click on that donate button if you want to donate or click on that join button if you like to sign up someone or maybe yourself. Starting as low as $22 per year, you can become one of the loudest voices of freedom in Australia.
Nina will transition into a president extremely effectively. That was presidential.
Vote for Nina.
March for Nina. All right, cool. See you guys next week.
Stay up.